Welcome to another episode of Startup Health Now, the weekly show celebrating the healthcare transformers and changemakers reimagining healthcare. My name is Stephen Krein. In today's episode, we're at the Wearable Tech and Health Conference in New York City that is organized by ApplySci, and we're going to sit down with Robert Mittendorf, a physician and venture capitalist at Norwest Venture Partners. This is going to be a great episode.
It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage.
Welcome back. We're sitting down with Dr. Robert Mittendorf, a physician and venture capitalist from Norwest Venture Partners. Welcome, Robert.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, thanks for coming in today. You know, I love the idea of a physician and a venture capitalist. So I want to, before we kind of dig into the subject matter, I'd love to hear a little bit more about you and kind of how you ended up as a venture capitalist and a physician.
Yeah, I would say, you know, being a venture capitalist is almost as privileged as being a physician. It's an amazing job.
Really?
Yeah, it's an amazing job because you get to when you talk to an entrepreneur, they're so focused on the way they see the world, and they're so convinced that that's how the world will be. If you just sit with them and listen to them, it's an amazing experience to kind of get inside of a view of the world and kind of hear how things might look. And then you have to step back and be a little more practical and think through the issues. It's similar in that sense in being a doctor, where you walk into a room. I'm an ER doctor, and you walk into a room and you listen to a patient's, you know, either it's a set of symptoms or a diagnostic odyssey that they went through, and they're concerned about what this might mean. Do they have cancer? Do they have a brain tumor? And so getting in their worldview is you know, it's a privilege to just to be able to hear someone's story and try to relate to it.
So how did you end up deciding to become a venture capitalist after becoming a physician? Kind of what led to you landing at Norwest?
Yeah, you know, the specific venture capital job, I think, is something I've looked at for a while. But it was more the general concept, which was part of the plan, actually, since I decided from high school to go to college for engineering. And that was, I got pretty excited when I was younger around the application of science to solve problems. And I actually had the opportunity in high school to work with I grew up in D.C. to work with some innovators helping the Defense Department build software to automate target recognition, say, for example, with satellites. I love the idea of building stuff to solve a problem. I kind of made the decision there that I'd rather be on the saving lives side. And so, you know, I had some other experiences that led me to medicine, but it was always part of the plan to kind of learn how to help build stuff, learn how companies work, and then most importantly, learn what it's like to be the person taking care of a patient. And so that's kind of the pathway I took. I became an ER doctor because, frankly, it's a really fun specialty. Mm-hmm. You get to try to fix things in a really quick way. And when you step into a shift, you have no idea what you're going to, you know, have some coffee before you arrive at work. You could have an hour of, you know, relatively mundane problems, or you could have a really challenging patient that you need to turn around to save their life in a couple of minutes. So it's always been
part of the plan.
That's
when the music starts playing in the background and things. Yeah. But it's a good gig because it lets you actually have a couple different, you know, kind of careers at the same time, right? Because it's kind of shift work in a way that lets you, yeah, when you're done, and you can kind of go do some other things.
It is. And I think the other part about the emergency department that has been really valuable is you are the front of the funnel. So, you know, there's primary care outside the hospital where people go with long-term problems. But then there's all this stuff that costs a lot of money, and a lot of it comes directly through the emergency department. So Stanford, where I trained, I think a third of our patients in the ER ended up getting admitted to the hospital. So it's really the front of the funnel for what healthcare is in the U.S.
So, you're practicing now, so you still see patients a few days a week?
I do. A few days a month.
And you also are at Norwest as a venture capitalist. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about how that plays out together, and then we'll jump into the VC.
So from a time perspective, they're very separate. I do a lot of weekend shifts. Norwest has been very open and okay with that. I would say as a venture investor, it's really given me perspective. So although I don't involve myself in any way with the purchasing decisions of the hospitals I work at, I do get to see things on the investment side that I think are really interesting in improving care. And so that's always exciting to think about where they would end up in an actual delivery of care. And certainly on the hospital side, especially with respect to healthcare delivery, I get to see the challenges of healthcare delivery and think through what solutions are going to be needed to make hospitals and medical care more efficient.
So, trained as a physician, learning as a venture capitalist, kind of spending your days meeting entrepreneurs, spending your days in startups. I always think of going to medical school or even law school as you're trained, you're mitigating risk, you're kind of weighing both sides, you're really being analytical about it. Entrepreneurship is a ton of risk. There's a lot of throwing spaghetti against the wall to try to see what works and what doesn't work and try to figure it out. How do you approach, your traditional training with what you need to do on a daily basis where reimagining the future plays a not so sure path?
You pointed it out exactly the way it is, which is in healthcare, as a provider, you're really trying, first do no harm, but then solve the problems that come to you. I think in companies, we're trying to go after markets, seize them, create advantages. I would say the one difference is in the ER, there's a lot of on your feet thinking you have to have, which is very similar all over a shorter time frame with what I did even before becoming an investor. I was a VP of marketing at a medical robotics company. And the ideas of creating solutions to problems as they come at you and then thinking two steps ahead, which you have to do with critically ill patients, is very similar. But I think it is a different hat you wear when you think about what you can do and what you want to do in the sense of companies that you look at versus what you have to solve today with a sick patient.
Yeah. So how has that shaped your thesis at Norwest, both the firm's thesis and even your own personal view of where the opportunities lie?
Yeah, I would say if you let yourself dream about what healthcare could be, it can be incredibly exciting and almost intoxicating to think about what we could do with the technology we have today and where technology is going. Things like an artificial organs we're printing or software that might make you think that you're speaking to a human as it's coaching you through a disease. I think, being a healthcare provider and having spent enough time in healthcare to know the practicalities of the space, I think I temper my enthusiasm with where things can go, with where they probably will go, given all of the structural challenges in the healthcare environment, from who pays to how things get approved to what you can say about those things that get approved to how you recruit patients, et cetera.
Okay. So when you think about themes right now, what would you choose as the top themes that you have your eyes set on right now for what in the next, let's call it 18 months, walk into your door that you'd get really excited about?
Yeah. I mean, we have a list of 14, but I'll give you my top couple here. I would say in the operational aspects of healthcare, I think there are two really interesting areas. Number one, I think once you get beyond the idea of an electronic medical record being a data repository in a hospital, we made an investment in a company called Health Catalyst, which is a data analytics and reporting platform. You then get to think of things like, okay, if I have all this data and I have algorithms and I have a physician and a nurse and technicians fielded to deal with patients, to manage patients, can I make them smarter? Can I be their peripheral brain, their decision support, their care management application, take that data in and help not coach them but advise them, say, hey, you forgot this evidence-based medicine measure for this patient that fits the criteria for it. I think that's one area that's very exciting. Well, you could call it decision support. You could call it care management. That's a very big area. I think another one is affecting communication between healthcare providers, again, in hospitals and outside. You'd be surprised at how far we are behind in terms of letting doctors, for example, text each other or send information between a nurse and a doctor. So that's another big theme. On the patient side, one of the areas, and you know, at this wearables conference here, we talked about it. One of the areas that's really exciting for me is thinking about a service that uses a device to collect, you know, passively if possible, as much information on a patient's activity and behavior as possible, then integrating that with some analytics and then providing in a very persuasive way, using persuasive design, you know, technology in a psychologically meaningful way back to that patient, something that will get them to change their behavior, a nudge. You know, a lot of companies in the consumer space have done this well, from Facebook to Twitter. You know, the addictive nature of some of
these.
Are you
seeing anybody do it here in this sector? Well,
I'm seeing people get close. I would say the one that's most exciting for me right now to look at is Omada Health.
Mm-hmm.
Omada Health is a company that took well-validated clinical protocols that were not very fun to lose weight and reduce your risk of diabetes, with some education and with understanding what triggers hunger and what triggers appetite, stress, et cetera. And they packaged it. You know, the founders were Harvard MD and IDEO lead product designer. They packaged it in a way where people remain engaged for 16 weeks, you know, 3-4 months, and they actually adhere to changes in behavior and lose weight. So those solutions where you take stuff that works but it's hard to deliver and not scalable, and you package it up and you add some psychology to get people to do the things that they really should be doing for themselves, and you deliver on it and then you demonstrate the results, those are the kinds of digital health businesses that we're looking at.
And so if you were to look at – how big is the portfolio today
in digital health? I think we have – I'm trying to think, 7 to 9 healthcare investments. We have 2 that are on the docket right now that we haven't announced yet. But okay. I think 7 to 9 in digital health. We have, I think, 12 or 15 overall in healthcare.
Okay. And over the next couple of years, you see that double, triple, or do you see it getting a little bit bigger? What's your thinking around commitment to digital health investing?
We tend to do, you know, $5 to $25 million checks, and then we do some growth work. So healthcare as a whole will probably do 2 to 4 investments a year. Across all of healthcare. So okay. we're quite picky.
Right. How long have you been at Norwest?
Almost 4 years.
All right. So take us back to your first investment you made.
Yeah.
Who was it in?
Well, and so the first digital health or non-digital?
Yeah, digital health.
The first digital health investment we made was in a company called iRhythm.
Okay.
Yeah.
What made you kind of get behind it, and what were you so excited about?
Yeah.
It?
So for me, the first thing that always, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, the first thing that always hits me is, do I want that thing? Is that thing going to work in a hospital where I'm at, or is that going to work in the healthcare environment that I know? iRhythm is a company that has developed a patch that records activity, but also more importantly, 12 to 14 days of continuous ECG data. Why is that important? Because about 2.5 to 3 million tests are ordered a year to assess people who have palpitations or pass out without a good reason. And the way it's done today is a very haphazard process. They wear a Walkman-like device with leads. They can't shower.
Some people don't even know what a Walkman is. So
yeah.
I need to go back.
They wear
that.
An iPod-like device.
A first-generation iPod
without flash memory that records with, you know, cables on your body. And then they take that to the doctor, back to their doctor, and their doctor downloads the data onto their PC and literally scans screen by screen looking for abnormalities. You can imagine that humans are probably not as good at computers as looking at signal. So what this company did was they built a Band-Aid-like patch, they put analytics in the cloud, and they were able to show with physician oversight that they could basically make that physician much more efficient in reading that. And what they could do is deliver a report back to the doctor. So that company is delivering a healthcare service to physicians. It's a B2B play that makes perfect sense. The consumer loves it. The physician gets better data with no work, and it fits under existing fee-for-service reimbursement. Plus, it picks up about 2.5 times as much arrhythmia activity because it's a longer-acting patch. But I would say what really excited us was the fact that that company not only had all of that, plus the clinical data and patents, they had a business model that made sense in digital health. So they actually plug into hospitals as a provider. They're like a provider, as you would have respiratory services in the hospital. They're a provider of cardiac testing services. So they bill insurers directly. They don't sell to the hospital.
So they had the that figured out before they walked in the door?
They had that in their thinking. Now, we took a lot of risk in the investment.
How early did you get in?
We didn't get in that early. They were doing several million in revenue, but they had not figured that part of the business model out yet.
And is your sweet spot – where is the sweet spot for you? Where do you like to meet the entrepreneur, and when do you like to get involved in the companies?
We've looked at a number of assets in the kind of wearable or device space or even healthcare IT that are pre-revenue and even pre-clearance. I would say our sweet spot are things that are on the cusp of clearance if they have any pathway to clearance or early commercialization. I think, you know, for as much as and I used to think this, as much as, you know, early entrepreneurship is frequently so focused on product market fit and technology, that the commercial challenges are certainly secondary and sometimes thought of as much easier. But it turns out that actually in healthcare, they're probably equally challenging. Yeah. And so if you pick a risk bucket, we tend to prefer the commercialization clinical risk bucket than technology risk, but we'll do both depending upon the opportunity. Right.
So putting money aside, because it's called all VCs have money, what makes Norwest special? What's the unique ability and unique kind of sauce that you guys bring to the table that you want entrepreneurs to think about when they think about you guys and maybe bringing you guys in?
Yeah, I would say two main things off the bat from a firm perspective before getting into healthcare. The first
is... I actually want to find out firm and then you.
Yeah.
Because it's all about also who you have
people.
Involved. Yeah.
Yeah. From a firm, we have a platform. We've got consumer investors. We've got infrastructure investors. We have growth equity investors. That allows us, when we bring a subcommittee together, to really look at every aspect of an investment of where it is today and where it will go and get kind of thoughts from people that spend their whole day looking at consumer metrics. So there's been a big education I've gotten looking at those consumer companies without any healthcare, you know, not in healthcare, and applying that to healthcare. Number two is we really consider ourselves an invited guest. So we back solid management teams that we believe in. We, even on the growth equity side, we don't back management teams we're trying to turn around. We want to back the right people at the start. Now, if we need to augment the team by helping to add someone, we're happy to do that. But we think of ourselves as invited guests, which means just like if you were to invite someone to your house for dinner, we're there if you ask, and we're there to help as much as you'd want. We have human resource capabilities. We have marketing capabilities that we can bring to bear. For me personally...
I like the invited guest analogy is funny. A buddy of mine always says invited guests are annoying pests. And so you kind of pick which one you want to be. So it's good that you want to be the invited guest because I think it's an interesting way to think about your role and how entrepreneurs should be viewing what you guys are doing. You're doing it in a way where you're real partners with them.
Yeah. And we want to back strong management teams to that point because our ideal investment is a quarterly board meeting. Frankly, yep, I mean, that gives us more time to find new investments. But if our CEO calls us and says, I need some introductions to payer customers. I need a medical director in this space. Should we run a search? Can we leverage your network? That's where we step in as an invited guest. For me personally, I get really interested in any company where, certainly if I'm called on to help with strategy or customer introductions or positioning, that's stuff that I've done formally in other roles, and I'm happy to help in those ways. I tend to, you know, also just try to provide, if asked again, my practical understanding of what's going to work and what's not going to work, whether it's from a payment perspective or in the practice of medicine or from a clinical regulatory approach.
Right. Do you worry you'll be wrong? In other words, as a physician, do you know too much? Sometimes blissful ignorance works to the entrepreneur's advantage, right? They didn't know what was going to work and what wasn't. They tried it. It worked. Do you think there's a little bit of, in healthcare especially, people who know what works and what doesn't work and they want to sprinkle that onto the entrepreneur's plans?
Yeah, it's a great point. I think we're looking at a company right now. And I think there's a specific experiment that it's a commercial stage company that they have very little revenue, but they're disrupting a massive part of the hearing aid market. And the question there is, what's the experiment that can prove that they're right in the shortest, most cost-effective way possible. So there's some hesitation because they're doing something that's going to, you know, rock the market. And so I think the one thing that we, you know, in that case, you try to help the entrepreneur with is understand, is there that killer experiment you can do that's low cost that can prove that they're right?
Right. So you kind of help guide them to the quickest, fastest, and most efficient way to at least some semblance of validation.
Right. And you're right. They need to think they're right.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be in the position as CEO if they didn't. Sometimes you just want to play a little bit of a devil's advocate to say, you're probably right. Why don't you prove it out in a small experiment first?
Sure. So I want to talk about mistakes for a few minutes.
Sure.
Mistakes entrepreneurs make walking in the door. A lot of entrepreneurs talk about meeting with VCs who don't know healthcare. And so they spend all their time educating VCs. They come in to meet with you, and you've kind of got the healthcare thing licked, and you've got the VC side. How do you think about what you see time and time again sitting across from you at the table, or maybe in an email that you get that is just the wrong way of approaching it?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I mean, we make mistakes too all the time. So, you know, it's definitely a two-way street. We make mistakes on you know, missing good deals, on not pricing them right. But in terms of what entrepreneurs what sometimes happens, I think, which could be improved on is, I would say the one thing I'm always looking for in digital health is a pathway to a commercial model that makes sense to me. So it's surprising that I don't see this all the time, but I think connecting within the existing system of how people get paid and how people get motivated, connecting a technology solution to the delivery of care or to an existing model of that is critical to see in the pitch. So as an example, you know, if you fall under a CPT code, you need to know the code. You need to know the amount that Medicare typically pays in that code. If you have a device that may require regulatory approval, it's worthwhile to look up the other devices in that category and how they achieved approval in the past.
Are people coming in without that information?
Sometimes they are. I think these are the ones that are kind of, the boxes should be checked. You know, once we get beyond that, we can have more nuanced discussions around the pricing of the ultimate offering or the feature set or what clinical data you need to develop to really prove to a medical director or a payer that this is worthwhile covering.
Right. So what's the golden ticket into you? I mean, so when you think about, like, what is an entrepreneur, what should they have nailed when they sit down with you that makes you really feel good about the next step, you know, a second meeting, a third meeting?
That's a hard question. I mean, we've been so privileged to have really interesting and great entrepreneurs pitch to us. I think it's not one thing. I got to tell you, I think we've talked to 1,800 or something companies in the last 3.5 years, broadly in digital health. And I think it's something after you see enough, and I certainly am still, in early on, I think you see it and you kind of know it at this point. It's a quality of the answers to questions. It's a tightness to the pitch. It's touching all the bases that you need to kind of deliver the package of the company to you in a way that's compelling. And it ends up ultimately coming down to a question of confidence. I mean, it's a question of, do I think this person knows enough, is tenacious enough, has the right personal skills to lead a company that I'm going to put my career on the line for and, you know, my firm's money.
The word confidence is a key one, right? How often an entrepreneur comes in and there's a huge difference between knowing something is going to play out and hoping something's going to play out. And when you see an entrepreneur know and believe in their belly that it's going to work, it's a huge difference between that person and the person who's thinking and kind of hoping things play out. At least from my standpoint, I always see a huge difference in how confidence then parlays into actual funding a lot of times when the entrepreneur, people want to go on the journey with the entrepreneur versus get a little bit skeptical because they sense that skepticism in the entrepreneur's voice.
Right. And there's the confidence comes out in the question and answer of a presentation. You know, certainly the presentation has to be very polished, but the confidence comes out when you ask a question and they either give you, hopefully they give you one of two answers, compelling logic, not just logic, but logic that says to you, that compels me to their answer. Yep. I agree. They've thought it out and I agree with their logic, or data. And so the later we go, the more data we have. You can go early if you have a really tight, compelling logic story to why there should be confidence between the two people.
All right. So we're at the Wearable Tech and Digital Health Conference. We've got to talk and end with kind of some thoughts around this subsector within healthcare. Why are you here, and what do you think this space looks like a decade from now? I mean, you're wearing a couple different devices. I'm wearing an Apple Watch. What, you know, what's happening?
Yeah, I think we have two wearables companies, Basis, which was a kind of full activity tracker and a coaching platform that Intel purchased.
One of our companies too.
I know. I was going to mention that today. So good pick on both of our parts.
Going to Dean and Jeff, yeah.
I joined Norwest after the pick was made, but I was able to fortunately watch the story, and Jeff Holub did a great job there. I think the other one is Misfit, which Sunny is doing a great job leading. I think of wearables. What excites me is the ability to get passively all of this data on patients, and I think activity is just the beginning. Excites me. What really excites me is what I think really smartly designed software can do, along with maybe some human coaching occasionally to get people to change behavior. So what excites me the most is, you know, it's a necessary but not sufficient condition to have the data and have this persistent device that's collecting it. The next step is harnessing that to, in a contextual way, without me turning the device off, telling me, nudging me to do things that are good for me. And I think that's going to start in the fitness community because we're all activated. And hopefully that will bleed off with some very, very nice engineering into, you know, the harder to motivate places like type 2 diabetes.
So you think very specialized, different wearables. How many different wearables are here 5 years from now?
Well, I think from a device perspective, we're going to continue to see the explosion of different wearable devices. I mean, from fertility to pregnancy monitoring to fitness to cardiac monitoring. I think what's going to get exciting beyond that is software built that will, in a subscription-like model, hopefully coach me. So one of our investments, Lumosity, does brain training games. No devices involved, but your phone. And they have, really loyal people using it. They're doing quite well. There's no reason that what they've done there in terms of keeping people fresh every day with new games and new thoughts to making themselves feel better about themselves couldn't apply to what we traditionally think of diseases or conditions. It's just, I don't think the engineering has been done yet on the software side to make it as compelling as, say, Lumosity has.
Well, fantastic. Well, listen, I appreciate you spending today with us. Love the fact that we have Basis in common, but I know we're going to have a lot more companies in common in the coming years. Love the idea that you're a doctor and a venture capitalist. There's a whole new crop of clinicians and physicians becoming both venture capitalists and entrepreneurs. And I think in this next wave of innovation and reimagination of healthcare, it's kind of cool that you've got so many doctors and clinicians leaning in to the entrepreneurial and investing side to actually make this happen. So thanks for everything you're doing. Great spending time, and look forward to spending more time together.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot.